and Sissy Fairfield had stayed on after, and Hugh Wallace. They didn't seem to be getting on very well, but they'd neither of them leave, and it was getting rather late. We were telling ghost stories.
I don't know any more than you do. But I don't take it as lightly as you do, Miss Fairfield. It's true. I believe you disregard these things at your peril.
And what is your evidence?
I found some papers.
Oh, that's how these things always start. They're usually stuffed behind some books in the library. A dusty bundle, tied with ribbon, written in faded ink in an unknown hand.
On the contrary, they are signed and dated. I've looked into it. The author was a Mr. Raxall. He was a writer.
Reviews?
A travel writer. They were his notes on what proved to be his last expedition to Scandinavia. There were notes on accommodation, accounts of conversations with racy innkeepers and quaint locals, all in a chatty style, you know the sort of thing. But Mr. Raxall's curiosity seems to have tended towards antiquities.
My greatest discovery is the manor house at Roebeck, one of the best buildings of its kind in all the country, built about 1600, belonging to the family de la Gardie.
Mr. Raxall gained permission to study the archive in the library of the manor house. He took rooms at the village inn.
The Golden Hind, but a short walk away and tolerably comfortable. The manor house itself stands in a park, surrounded by woodland. At the edge of the park, on a steep knoll, is the church, built in an unusual style. There is a curious addition to the building. At the eastern end of the north aisle is erected a mausoleum for the de la Gardie family. This is a large building with oval windows and a domed roof, and there is no access to it from the church. It has its own door and steps on the north side.
The archive at the manor house, you see, was just what he wanted, full of correspondence, journals, account books, stretching back for hundreds of years, full of amusing and picturesque detail.
The builder of the house itself was one Count Magnus. There is a portrait of him hanging on the staircase, a phenomenally ugly man, and without a very good reputation. They still talk of him in the district, as mine host at the Golden Hind confirmed.
The Count was not favourite here. He was a cruel man. There is a story that Count Magnus went on the Black Pilgrimage.
Black Pilgrimage? What's that?
Nielsen?
You will excuse me, Herr Raxall. My guests are calling.
But that afternoon, browsing in the archive, Mr. Raxall came across a volume that had clearly been in the possession of Count Magnus.
Aha! Liber Nigrae Peregrinationis, the Book of the Black Pilgrimage. Let's see if I can decipher this. If any man desires to obtain a long life, if he would obtain a faithful messenger and see the blood of his enemies, it is necessary that he should first go to the city of Chorazin, and there salute the Prince of the Air. See the rest of this matter among the more private things. The Prince of the Air.
As Mr. Raxall walked back to the inn across the park that evening, his mind was full of the Count.
So, a dabbler in alchemy too, are you, Count? Most picturesque.
He had no eyes for his surroundings, and was suddenly astonished to find himself standing at the gate of the church, looking in at the mausoleum.
There you lie, I suppose. Poor old Count Magnus. I should dearly like to see you.
Well,
what's that?
Herr Raxall.
Good evening.
I met the deacon in the village.
He said he would take you round the church and show you the mausoleum tomorrow if you wish.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Do you know, Nielsen, I found a little bit in my researches today about the Black Pilgrimage. So tell me, what did Count Magnus find on his Black Pilgrimage, do the stories say?
Herr Raxall, I can tell you this one little tale and no more.
Oh, but...
You must not ask anything when I am done.
Very well, if you insist.
In my great-grandfather's time, there were two men, Hans Torbjörn and Anders Björnsson, who said, the Count is long dead. We do not care for him. We will go tonight and have a free hunt in his wood. The long wood it is, behind the church there.
Yes.
Those men that heard them say this, they said, no, do not go. We are sure you will meet with persons walking who should not be walking. And Torbjörn and Anders Björnsson laughed. They went to the wood that night. My great-grandfather sat up here in this room. It was the summer, a light night. The window was open. He could see out into the wood and hear. He sat here, and two or three men with him, and they listened. At first, they hear nothing. Then they hear someone scream, as if the inside of his soul is being twisted out of him. Then, closer to the house, they hear a laugh. It was not one of those two men who laughed. Indeed, they all of them said that it was not any man at all. All of them in the room caught hold of each other, and they did not move till daybreak. Then they go to bury the men. They are sure these men are dead. They found them at the edge of the wood. Hans Torbjörn was not dead. He was standing with his back against the tree, and all the time he was pushing with his hands, pushing something away which was not there. They took him to the house at Nyköping, but he went on pushing with his hands, and he died there before the winter. Was not there, because the flesh of it was sucked off the bones. My great-grandfather did not forget that.
The next day, the deacon led Mr. Raxel round the church and left him in the mausoleum, having shown him where to replace the key by the church door. Mr. Raxel wandered about the mausoleum, taking copious notes.
Dignified monuments, mostly 17th and 18th century. Many epitaphs. The central space occupied by three sarcophagi, two with plain metal crucifixes. The third belongs to Count Magnus himself. No crucifix. Instead, a full-length effigy, and round the sides, bands of ornament representing various scenes. A battle with pikemen and cannons, belching smoke, an execution. A third scene shows among trees a man running at full speed with outstretched hands. What follows him? A strange form. Unduly short, and for the most part muffled in a hooded garment which sweeps the ground. This is evidently an allegory, a fiend pursuing a hunted soul. Perhaps this is the origin of the story of Count Magnus and his mysterious companion. The sarcophagus is secured by three massive and finely worked padlocks. Oh, one of which has come loose and lies on the pavement.
As I said, all I have are the incomplete notes that Raxel was making towards his projected book, and at this point they begin to degenerate. But there is one final fully written-up passage.
It is curious how, on retracing a familiar path, one's thoughts engross one to the absolute exclusion of surrounding objects. Tonight, as I was returning from an afternoon in the archive, for the second time, I entirely failed to notice where I was going, when suddenly I awoke to consciousness and found myself, as before, turning in at the churchyard gate, and I believe singing or chanting something. Are you awake, Count Magnus? Are you asleep, Count Magnus? Perhaps the romantic and brooding atmosphere of the place is affecting me. I went on into the mausoleum, although by this time the light was beginning to fade.
I was mistaken about the padlocks. Two are loose. The remaining one is still firm, and I cannot guess how it is opened. If I could undo it, I would be tempted to take the liberty of opening that lid. It is strange the interest I feel in the personality of this grim old nobleman. I must replace the key.
When Mr. Raxel returned to the inn, he found a letter awaiting him that meant he had to draw to a close his stay at Råbäck. He made his arrangements and spent a last day in the archive, adding as much material as he could to his notes. On his walk back through the park, he lingered in the evening light, gazing at the dark woods behind the church.
I must say my goodbye to the Count. Wouldn't do to go without making my bow to the old sinner. I'll just get the key.
Oh, here you are in your great copper coffin. You may have been a bit of a rascal in your time, Magnus, but for all that I should like to see you, or rather...
Ow!
He felt a blow to his foot. He drew it back and something fell onto the floor. It was the third and last padlock. He stooped to pick it up, but before he had raised himself, there was a sound of metal hinges creaking, and he distinctly saw the lid shifting upwards.
I was outside that dreadful building in less time than I can add the words. And what frightens me more, I could not turn the key in the lock. As I sit here in my room, noting these facts, I ask myself whether that noise of creaking metal continued, and I cannot tell whether it did or not. I only know that there was something more than I had written which alarmed me. That whether it was sight or sound, I'm not able to remember. Oh, what is this that I have done?
Poor Mr. Wraxall. He left for home the next day, but very uneasy in his mind. On reaching England, he took a carriage and drove hard across country to his house, hoping to put himself out of reach of some person or persons that he had come to regard as his pursuers. It was about 9 o'clock on a moonlit night when he neared the village. He was sitting forward and looking out of the window at the fields and woods. Suddenly, he came to a crossroads. At the corner, two figures were standing motionless. Both were in dark cloaks. The taller wore a hat, the shorter a hood. He had no time to see their faces as the horse shied violently and broke into a gallop. Arrived at his house, for the next 24 hours he lived, comparatively speaking, in peace. I have his final notes written on that day.
Is there no hope? I know they will come. How? I don't know, nor when. But I know they will come. The doctor will call me mad. The policeman would laugh. The parson is away. What have I done? All I can do is lock my door and pray to God.
People still remember in the village how Mr. Wraxall came home one night and was found the next evening, dead. There was an inquest, and the jury viewed the body, and one or two of them fainted, and the verdict was visitation of God, and none of them would speak of what they saw. No glimmer of light was ever thrown on the mystery.
So how did you find out?
I bought the house. It had stood empty for 50 years. I liked it and took it. The papers I found tucked out of sight in a cupboard under the window in the drawing room.
It has atmosphere, then, your house.
Certainly. You must come and see it. In fact, I insist. You see, it is haunted.
Really? The bloody ghost of Mr. Wraxall?
No. It's in one of the bedrooms.
Really?
Yes. Look, it's nearly Christmas Eve, and I have to be with my people for the weekend. But I could take you down there on Boxing Day. Both of you.
To meet your ghost.
I challenge you, Miss Fairfield, to come and spend the night in the Red Room.